Okay, this morning we'll be in chapter 36 of Isaiah. I'll read it first. Now it came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah that Sir Nacho Chip, I'll just call him that to get over with it, king of Assyria, came up against all the defense cities of Judah and took them. And the king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh from Lachish to Jerusalem unto King Hezekiah with a great army, and he stood by the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field. Then came forth unto him Eliakim, Hilkiah's son, which was over the house, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah, Asaph's son, the recorder. And Rabshakeh said to them, Say ye now to Hezekiah, Thus saith the great king, the king of Assyria, With what confidence is this wherein thou trust? I say, you, saith you, but they are but vain words. I have counsel and strength for war. Now on whom do you trust that you do rebel against me? Lo, thou trust in the staff of this broken reed on Egypt, whereon if a man lean, it will go into his hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to all that trust in him. But if you say to me, We trust in the Lord our God, is it not he whose high places and whose altars that Hezekiah has taken away and said to Judah and Jerusalem, You shall worship before this altar? Now therefore, give pledges, I pray you, to my master the king of Assyria, and I will give to you 2,000 horses if you be able on your part to set riders on them. How then will you be able to turn away the face of one captain of the least of my master's servants and put your trust on Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? And am I now come up without the Lord against this land to destroy it? The Lord said to me, Go up against this land and destroy it. Then said Eliakim and Shebna and Joah unto Rabshakeh, Speak, I pray you, unto your servants in Assyrian language, for we understand it. And speak not to us in the Jews' language, in the ears of the people that are on the wall. But Rabshakeh said, Has my master sent me to your master and to you to speak these words? Has he not sent me to the men that sit upon the wall, that they may eat their own dung and drink their own urine with you? Then Rabshakeh stood and cried with a loud voice in the Jews' language and said, Hear ye the words of the great king, the king of Assyria. Thus saith the king, Let not Hezekiah deceive you, for he shall not be able to deliver you. Neither let Hezekiah make you trust in the Lord, saying, The Lord will surely deliver us. This city shall not be delivered into the hand of the king of Assyria. Hearken not to Hezekiah, for thus saith the king of Assyria, Make an agreement with me by a present, and come out to me, and eat ye every one of his vine, and every one of his own fig tree, and drink ye every one the waters of his own cistern, until I come and take you away to a land like your own land, of corn and wine, a land of bread and vineyards. Beware lest Hezekiah persuade you, saying, The Lord will deliver us. Has any of the gods of the nations delivered his land out of the hand of the king of Assyria? Where are the gods of Hamath and Arphad and the gods of Sepharim? And have they delivered Samaria out of my hand? Who are they among all the gods of these lands that have delivered their land out of my hand, that the Lord should deliver Jerusalem out of my hand? But they held their peace and answered him not a word, because the king's commandment was, saying, Answer him not. Then came Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, that was over the house, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah the son of Asaph, the recorder, to Hezekiah with their clothes rent, and told him the words of Rabshakeh. Whew, that's a mouthful, ain't it? Okay, again, we start off in this first verse. Now it came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah. What does 14 represent? It represents Passover. Okay, so this is a time of starting, isn't it? Isn't that where the Jewish people started with God in the deliverance? Was it Passover? And then they come in the Exodus, rather. Was King Hezekiah. Okay, what does Hezekiah represent, or what does it mean in the Hebrew language? Strengthened by God, Okay, so he was set up. Didn't God set up all powers that be? Every power that be is ordained of God, according to Paul's writings. That Sir Nacho Chip, king of Assyria, came up against all the defense cities of Judah and took them. Here's something I missed before. He came against how many? And how many did he take? All of them. What's the defense city? It's the mind of Christ that's defended. The Garden of Eden that was protected by the cherubim. Okay? Remember in Job's life, what did the Satan tell him? Well, I can't touch him because you've got a wall around him. You've got a hedge of protection around him, right? That's the mind of Christ within us. Okay? And he came and took all those defense cities. Didn't say he got through the wall. He said he took the defense city, didn't he? Okay? And the king and the cities of Judah and took them. And the king of Assyria sent Rabshakeh. And we know Rabshakeh is the thought process coming from the carnal mind. Okay? So all these thoughts were sent from that carnal mind, from Lachish. You know what that word means? Invincible. Do you know what the carnal mind thinks it is? Invincible. It thinks it's bulletproof. It cannot be touched. This thing up here thinks it cannot be defeated. You don't believe it? Go out there and talk to some of them today. Because everyone's got one. It said, from Lachish to Jerusalem. What's Jerusalem? It's the very beginning of religion. It's the what they call it, the pit, or the very start of something. The seedbed of religion came from there, the Jewish religion. Originally called Jebus, okay? To King Hezekiah with a great army. Speaking of religion, what does Hezekiah actually really represent here? Now, he's not the priest, is he? He's not the real man of God. He represents the strong arm of religion. Does a king make his own rules? Sure does. And that's what religion does. They sent King Hezekiah with a great army. And he stood by the conduit, or the water course, of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field. Now let's take this apart and look at something we might not have seen before. He stood by the conduit, and that's the water course. Wonder where the water course is that God's talking about. Is it external or internal?
Internal.
Okay. And he said the upper pool. Right there, your mind. There's the upper pool he's talking about. Where's Rabshakeh come from? Right up here, see? Right there he stands, right by it. You notice he wasn't in the water pool, was he? He was by the water pool. In the highway, or the higher way, of, what's that word fuller mean?
Cleansing.
Washing or cleansing. In the higher way of washing and cleansing. The way to clean this, he's standing by it, but he can't do anything about it, can he? The only way that Rabshakeh can do anything to you is if you buy his lie. He can't touch it. But you remember what Satan said to God in Job? Hey, I can't touch him. You got a hedge around him. And what did he say? Okay, go ahead and do what you want to, but you can't touch his life. See that? If you realize this is all talking about the same thing, he's telling you, you're protected. When are you going to believe that God's hand is around you? When are you going to stop having this fear controlling our lives? We don't need fear, do we? You're not given a spirit of fear, but power, love, and a sound mind. When are we going to believe that? If we believe it, guess what we're going to start doing? We're going to live it. We're going to walk through life with no fear. And that little bumper sticker they stick on these cars, no fear, or ain't scared, or whatever they want to put on it. You know what? You won't be. You won't be scared of anything, whatever comes your way. And that doesn't mean somebody can't jump out from behind a corner and startle you and say, but that's not fear. That's just being startled a minute. When you realize who it is, you'll just laugh at them and walk on. Okay. There's no need, there's no place for fear in our lives. That's what he's trying to convey to us in all these multiple ways he says it. We have no need of fear in our lives, do we? And we don't have to fear God either. We reverence God. That word's mistranslated. Okay. And then came to Eliakim. He was set up by God, correct? Hilkiah's son, and that means his portion is Yahweh or God, which was over the house, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah, the Asaph's son, the recorder. Well, what he's speaking of is three things here. Okay? In the first verse, he said he came up against all defense cities and took them how many? He took them all. Well, down here, these three sons, Eliakim, Hilkiah, and Joah, are all three revelations of realms in us. Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. Okay? Obviously, Eliakim is Passover. And, excuse me, got to see the Shebna is Pentecost. And Joah is Tabernacles. Do you know what Joah means? Family of the first. Guess what? First fruit. First is first, isn't it? That's the first, speaking of the first fruit. So he's telling you that he came unto Eliakim, which was over the house. He's saying all three of them came to Rabshakeh. The king sent them out there. Religion sent their emissaries out there. And these are the all three realms are being sent to him. And Rabshakeh said to them, "Say ye now to Hezekiah, thus saith the great king, the king of Assyria, what confidence is in wherein you trust? Why are you not trusting in me, what I can see, what I can taste, what I can touch, what I can smell, what I can hear? Why are you not trusting in these natural things and all the strength that I have?" And isn't that what Rabshakeh does to us? He tells us, you shouldn't believe that because they're bad people or all these bad things are going to happen to you. And isn't he ministering fear? He said, we're going to come in and take the city, but you know what? You haven't done it yet, have you? And God said, they can't do it anyway.
Ministering doubt.
Doubt, and doubt is fear. The opposite of faith is what? Fear. So if you get doubt and fear rolled in together there and they're basically kissing cousins, guess what? You're going to have issues.
So ask them, why are you not trusting in your circumstances?
Yeah, why aren't you trusting in your circumstances? That's a good way to say it. Verse 5, he goes on and says, "But I say, saith you," he's saying you're saying this, "but they are vain words. I have counsel and strength for war. Now on whom do you trust that you rebel against me?" He's saying, who do you think you are overriding me? I. My ego. Your ego says, who are you to override what I'm telling you? I'm the one in control here. And that's what the ego thinks, isn't it?
Who says that you are God?
Yeah. Yeah. Who told you that?
Shouldn't we be still and know that I'm saved?
We should be, yes. But we've got some tests to go through, don't we? And Rabshakeh goes on and says, "Lo, you trust in the staff of this broken reed on Egypt." And what's Egypt represent? The world, the world system, the religious systems. "Whereon if a man lean, it will go into his hand, it'll go into his hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to all that trust in him." So if I want to trust the world system and everything going on in that world system, then I've got to stop leaning upon that world system. I've got to trust what's within me. Don't you? This is personal. You got to work out your own deliverance, don't you? Paul said you got to work out yourself. So we got to get off of this thing about somebody else. As long as we go to what's called a church system of rules and regulations, you will never become a mature, independent son of God that God wants you to be. How can you when someone else is thinking for you? When you come here, I challenge you to think, I want your individuality. God made it that way. He wants you to think. And I'm challenging you today and every day, and every day we come together, I challenge you to think. Don't just take what I say. You think about it. What did you start saying?
Wouldn't that broken reed, wouldn't that be considered like the law?
Sure it is.
Because when we depend on that broken reed, the law goes into our hand, which is our
works. Life. Messes our whole life up. Absolutely. Good thought. Where do we leave off at? Oh. Starting seven. But if you say to me, we trust in the Lord our God, the word Lord our God right there should be, trust in the Lord God, the word our shouldn't be there. It's the word Yahweh Elohim. Now, do you realize what they're saying when they say the word Yahweh Elohim? Huh? How about the totality of God? See, because God is not separated from us, is he? As long as we think God's up in heaven and we're down here on earth, then we're never going to come out from under the law, according to Matthew 5, 18 and 19. We're one with God. Didn't Jesus make a prayer in John 17? Father, make them one with me as I am one with you. Do you think Jesus asked for something that he did not get? You think, Mike? So guess what we are? Hey, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. You just need to hear what God's telling you. You got to know that this is about you. It's not about somebody back there thousands of years ago. If this book is not alive to you today, what's the point of reading it? It's prevalent in our lives right now. But anyway, he said, we trust in the totality of God. Is it not he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah has taken away? Say, when you say, so what he's saying is this. If you say you trust in God, but you're following Hezekiah, Hezekiah, which represents who? Religion. He's the one that took you away from God's altars and said you're going to worship right here in Judah and Jerusalem. Didn't Jesus say the time will come when you no longer worship in Judah and Jerusalem, right? He said, well, now it is coming and now is where you'll no longer worship in Jerusalem and Judah. You worship in here. See, worship is not what we come here to do. It's a lifestyle we live.
Now, said to, you shall worship before this altar. Mm-hmm. They were still worshiping Father.
No, they were what they were told was Father. See, religion doesn't worship God. They worship idols and doctrines and things. You know, that they set up idols, but idols are what? Images. So they have an image in their mind of what God is, and that's what they're worshiping. But is that God necessarily? God is spirit, see? So they weren't really worshiping God. They were following the man. Hezekiah, he was the king, he was the boss, and he told them what they had to do. See, what you should do, each one of us individually, and this is everywhere, should be doing what he tells us in here. See, not what the preacher says from here, not what I say from here. I'm trying to give you the best I can, and then you and God got to work this thing out with yourselves. See, that's the thing it's about. The church, Hezekiah, which represents the religious system, is trying to control you and dominate you and make you do what he says is right. I'm not trying to make anybody do anything. I'm giving you enough information, you can make your own decision. See, that's the difference. Did Jesus say we had to do anything? He gave us the truth, and it's up to us to work it out with God. If we're hard-headed and stiff-necked, we won't. If we want to hear the truth, we truly love God, we're going to look for it. We're going to go after it. But anyway, Hezekiah said, you shall worship before this altar. See, the one, whether it's Baptist or Pentecostal or Catholic or whatever. Now, therefore, give pledges, I pray. Give me all your money. To my master, the king of Assyria, and I will give to you 2,000 horses if you be able to set riders on them. He said, I'll equip you. You don't have to worry about me. I've heard people say this. I don't talk to God. My preacher does that. He prays for me and he reads. I don't have to. I've heard that said many times. I don't have to because my preacher does it for me. Well, that's exactly what religion does to you. It believes that you don't have to do anything yourself.
Give us Saul.
Give us Saul.
What if he tells God the wrong thing?
Well, I'm just trusting the man, see. I'm trusting Hezekiah.
He interprets it
wrong. That's the problem, see. And I don't think, does not the book say, did Jesus say this? If you ask for an egg, will he give you a scorpion? Or if you ask this, will he give you a serpent? Will he?
Ask for a fish, will he give you
a scorpion or something like that? Anyway, but he said, would he give you the wrong thing?
No.
See, both of them things are some deadly things, you know. So if God, if you ask the truth of God, and didn't he say in another place, if you lack truth, ask God in James?
Yes.
Ask God, and he gives to all men, how many?
Never.
If you really want it, ask for it, and you're going to get it. You may not like it, but you're going to get it. Because it's going to change the way you think. Okay?
He's going to turn the light on.
And the light comes on, it's going to reveal flaws that you didn't think you had. Worship at the wrong altar will make you never see those faults in your life that need to be changed. And he goes on there and he's reasoning. This is Rabshakeh's reasoning in your mind. Well, sure, we all do that. We reason with what God says, and that's Rabshakeh and the men of God, the man of God inside reasoning. He said, if you can't put 2,000 men on horses that I give you, the strength I give you, how then will you turn away from the face of one captain, the least of my master's servants, and put your trust on the world system for horses and horsemen, chariots and horsemen? He said, how can you do that? He's telling you how little strength you have and what ability you have. You have no defense against him. See, now, if you want to believe that, you can be defeated. But you can tell Rabshakeh to take a walk. In verse 10, it goes on and says, and am I now come up without the Lord against this land to destroy it? The Lord said to me, go up against this land and destroy it. Do you know how many churches out there it says today, God told me to say this? And you know who it was? Hezekiah, the religious system, or Rabshakeh, or the combination of both. It was not God speaking that. Do you think God would, if you're living your life the way you truly should be living it, would he send someone up to destroy you? He would correct you, but not destroy you. And see, religions say, God's going to wipe you out. He's going to send you to hell and torment you forever. That's not God. God didn't create all this mass of humanity just so he could have something to torture and torment for eternity. I can't believe that. But he created it to correct it and set it in right standing. And again, telling us that we were wrong would not correct us, would it? But he's going to correct us. And when we learn by experience, then we're going to come back with the same thought process that God has. And that's what he wants us to have. If we love God, can we violate any one of the Ten Commandments? Although they're not commandments, they're actually promises. If you really, when God gets through changing that heart, you'll never want to kill anybody, will you? Guarantee it. You won't want to steal from anybody. You won't want to lie to anybody. You don't want to lust after someone else's wife. You won't want any of that stuff. Because with that new heart, how could you possibly even think of that? Because that one man in the earth is okay, but when you got two, you got an issue, don't you? And when Rabshakeh's taken out, guess what? There's only one man left, and that's Christ. So you can't have duality any longer, can you? That's a promise. Ought to be encouraged by it. Okay, verse 11. Then said Eliakim, Shebna, and Joah unto Rabshakeh, speak, I pray you, unto your servants in the Syrian language, because we understand it. Literally, that word right there is Shama. We hear it with the intent. We can respond to it positively. And that's what religion says. Let's talk in the back room. Don't want to talk it out here. We'll offend somebody. Well, you know God's word's meant to offend the natural mind. He said offenses must come. Literally, that word must come literally means it's necessary to have offenses. If I'm never offended, I will never change. Is that correct? Someone's got to bring something up in my face to make me realize that ain't good. What'd you say this week, Lisa? Somebody tried to get your peace, didn't they? But they brought something up in front of your face you saw wasn't desirable, right? See, that's what it has to be. Somebody has to come along and kick you in the shins to let you know something's not right there. Because if you don't ever get stirred up, will it ever come out? You'll never know it. You'll never be aware of it. It'll just be lurking back there ready to get you when it's time. Okay? He said, speak not to us in the Jews' language in the ears of the people that are on the wall. But Rabshakeh said, has my master sent me to your master and to you to speak these words? Has he not sent me to the men that sit upon the wall that they may eat their own dung and drink their own urine with you? With you? So guess what he's telling religion? It's a bunch of crap. Hello. Well, I'm just saying, I'm saying it the best way I can say it. I'm being nice. Their religious stuff is a bunch of crap. You can wash it down with urine. You know? That's what he's telling you. And then Rabshakeh stood and cried with a loud voice to the Jews in a language and said, hear, Shammah, hear me, with the intent to respond to me positively. You, the words of the great king of Assyria. If you listen to what the religious system preaches, man, all it is about humanity. It's a humanistic message. It's about what you do, about you correcting everything. God says, you can't do it, and I'm going to do it for you, show you how much I love you. Isn't that true? Yeah. And the church system does that there. Tells you how weak you are, how much of a failure you are. It's all about humans doing everything for you. It's not a humanistic view. God is a spirit, and it's not about the humanistic side of it. That's just a suit we're wearing through this test. That's all. It'll be over and we can get rid of it. Then things will get real good. Thus saith the king, verse 14, let not Hezekiah deceive you. See, even the deceiver is talking about religion. Even the world system knows that the religious system is screwed up. I know people that's never been near a church in their life, and they say, church is crazy, but what you say makes sense. They know that the system is wrong. You know what? Most of the church system knows the system wrong, but they've invested so much, they can't possibly say, I was wrong, and correct themselves and come out of it. We had some people come from India here one time. They flew all the way from India to come here just to spend less than 24 hours with us and then took off and went back. There was a couple of missionaries and wives and a boy. Well, the one man and his wife and son, they heard it. And the other man, I can't remember his name at all, but anyway, he was from Cincinnati originally. He married a girl from over in India. And when they came here, they wouldn't sleep in the bed. They wanted to sleep on the floor because he was doing what she wanted him to do. But after we'd been almost nonstop around the clock talking and discussing scriptures, and I started to go to bed. It was about 3 o'clock in the 2 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock, something like that. And we'd been going almost around the clock. We wanted to get a couple hours sleep before they had to leave. Well, this one guy had kind of wandered off. The one that was they were both Baptists at the time, and they thought they were anyway. And the one that went to bed, you know, Larry went on to bed, and this other guy, he says, can I talk with you? And he'd been wandered off all evening, and he come back to talk to me when everybody else went to bed. And he said, can we talk? And I said, sure. So we sit down and talk for about 3 hours more, maybe 4 hours. And he said, and this is what the words he said. It was amazing what he said. He didn't hear what he said, obviously, but he was saying it. He said, what I hear you say, I know is truth. But I hear this other voice in me saying, you've got too much invested. You can't possibly throw it all away. And he said those words. He was hearing two things he was wrestling with. Is that not what we're talking about here? He heard it very clearly, this voice telling him, you've got too much invested in this Baptist doctrine. You can't possibly do anything different than that. You're locked in. You've got so much invested. That's what Rabshakeh will tell you. He'll tell you, you can't go on with God because you've got too much invested. You'll look like you're an idiot. No, the idiot stays there. You've got to go on when God tells you to go on. You've got to go on. That's all there is to it. But What was it doing? Verse 14? It says, thus saith the king, let not Hezekiah deceive you, for he shall not be able to deliver you. He's trying to convince you, you can't go any further. You can't get away from him. He is the ultimate. That's the carnal mind. Neither let Hezekiah make you trust in the Lord, saying, the Lord shall surely deliver us. This city shall not be delivered into the hand of the king of Syria. He's saying, I can get you. I can get you. But you know what I got to say? You can't touch me. As Jesus said in his walk, how many times did people try to destroy him? Many times. And what was his response every time they tried to do him in? It's not yet my time. Right? Do you hear me? You've got the same right to claim the same thing because you're a child of God as much as anybody else. You've got a right to say, you can't take it. You can't take my joy. You can't take my peace. You can't torment me. You can't take my life. You can't tell me I'm going to die of some dreaded disease you're going to put on me. You can't do it. Because he said, he's got me protected. He's got a hedge about me, just like he's got a hedge about you. But you got to believe it. If you don't believe it, do you think that hedge is doing you any good? You're opening the gate and letting him in. Verse 16. Hearken not to Hezekiah, for thus saith the king of Assyria, make an agreement with me, make a present, and come out to me, and eat you every one of his vine. Hello, sounds like individual to me. Do your own thing, humanistic. Eat your own vine, and everyone his own fig tree. Make up your own religion, do it any way you want to. And see, that's what some people pervert the truth of reconciliation. That everybody's going to make it. Yep, have to agree. But everybody is not first fruit. Can't be, can they? In a harvest, there's got to be three different levels of harvest. First fruit, general harvest, and gleaning. Correct? Well, you think God's going to come in and just do a big harvest and take everything all at one time? Because the natural teaches you about the spiritual, doesn't it? So if God's got three realms of harvest, then this thing about everybody's first fruit is ridiculous, isn't it? First fruit, can you come up here and take a third step? Can you take a second step? Not until you take the first one. And God's the same way. Until you go through the steps with Him the way He wants you to, you're not going to be harvested. But you will be harvested, I promise you that. That's the truth of reconciliation. It doesn't mean you can do anything you want to make up your own religions. Yeah, you can, but what's your reward going to be? A wise servant will have rule over sons that cause shame, won't he? Proverbs 17:2. Okay. You're going to have a reward. The reward is God Himself. If I live the life I'm supposed to, I have a portion of God in me that's greater than a portion of people who are disobedient. Would you agree to that? And that's why he said the reward's going to be greater. And didn't he say, I am your reward? I am your great and exceeding reward. So they can have all the gifts they want in religion, but I get the gift giver. Who's ahead? Who's ahead then? We got the gift giver, man. We're not worried about what gift I got. I got them all.
We
asses. Huh?
We
asses. We asses. That's us. We and us. There you go. But you can eat it from your own fig tree, that's your own religion, and drink everyone the waters of his own cisterns. Just whatever's in you, do it. If it feels good, do it. That's what religion tells you. There's all kinds. There's legalistic religions, and there's some of them that just anything goes. And neither one of them's correct. God has a plan and a purpose. And you know what? I can't tell you your plan and purpose. I'd be a liar if I said I could. And anyone else that tells you they can tell you everything about what you've got to do, they're lying too. They've got some ulterior motive for it. I got no ulterior motives. I'm just going to tell you what I know. I know what's worked in my life. And everything in my life's not exactly as yours. But it's somewhere close. I'm not going to take you off course. That's your job. If you're going to go off course, it's up to you. Look at 18. He said, "Beware of Hezekiah. He'll persuade you, saying, 'The Lord will deliver us.' Has any of the gods of the Gentile nations delivered this land, his land, out of the hand of the king of Assyria?" He says, "Anybody got away from me?" At that point, I'm going to tell you, until the king, the true king, Christ, takes his throne, nobody's going to be delivered from him, from the king of Assyria. Are they? Can anyone be delivered from the throne, from the throne of the carnal mind, before Christ takes his throne? It's impossible.
There's only one way to get to the Father.
That's right. Through Christ. Through Christ. When he said, "I am the way." Right on through. He said, "Where are the gods of Hamath, Arphad, and the gods of Seraphim? And have they delivered Samaria out of my hand?" Well, again, Hamath, that's that walled city, that fortress. And Arphad is the big spread out fields and everything. And the Seraphim is duality. They're speaking of three realms of the natural man out here in religion. And he said, "Have they delivered Samaria?" And that's all talking about duality. Is that taken out of my hand? Have they? Has anybody got out of the hand of the carnal mind without Christ?
No.
It's not going to happen. "Who are they among all the gods of these lands that have delivered their land out of my hand, that the Lord should deliver Jerusalem out of my hand?" He's reasoning with you. You know, you don't reason with the carnal mind. What do you do to it? You shut it down. You kill it. What did King David do when he was a little boy to the carnal mind, Goliath? He put a rock right between his ears, right between his eyes, and to kill that carnal mind. And then he went a little bit further and picked up a sword and cut the head off. He cut the head off of that serpent. You take the head off, it can't bite no more, can it? Sorry, it's done. And that's what we have to do. "But they held their peace and answered him not," or responded to him not a word, "because the king's commandment was," saying, "respond not to him." And then came Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, that was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and Joah the son of Asaph, the recorder, to Hezekiah, and with their clothes rent, and told him the words of Rabshakeh. So that was all three realms: Passover, Pentecost, and Tabernacles. Passover, Eliakim. Shebna was Pentecost, and Joah was Tabernacles. Okay? They all went and humbled themselves before Hezekiah. Now, when I tell you Hezekiah represents the religious system, God didn't destroy the religious system. He's used it to bring us through our Passover and Pentecostal experiences, didn't he? But there's got to be a time when we become no longer dependent upon a system like our socialistic systems of this world, that somebody will always give you what you need. You have to learn to stand up on your own two feet and be a child of God that He's called you to be. Who could Jesus go to in the world to talk about His issues?
Nobody.
He was talking to His Father. What do you think He's trying to tell you in that pattern?
He's the one that's got the answer.
Yeah, you've got people you can talk to. There's a few people we can talk to that have understanding, that we can help each other. But ultimately, who's got to make the decision? You and Father have to make the decision. That's what it's all about. And see, religion won't let you do that. If you go say, "Hey, God told me to go this way," and you're in a Baptist church, they say, "Well, you're a heretic. You're a troublemaker. Yeah. You're a rebel. We know what's best for you.
God doesn't talk to you."
That's what they'll say. God don't even talk. Some of them say, "God don't talk no more. He's finished."
You didn't hear.
Huh?
They say, "You didn't hear God."
No, God didn't talk to you. Well, just because you can't hear Him don't mean I can't. Maybe I can help you get some ears, because you need them if you make a statement like that. It's amazing how religion has reduced God to literal everything. But God is spirit, and he's not confined by anything.
Not limited.
No limits. He can do what He wants. And He can do things, just like in the Old Testament, He told a lot of the prophets to violate the law. Do you know that's a death sentence under the law?
Uh-huh.
Any violation of the law was what, Mike? Death. And yet God told them to go do it.
Because his law is greater than their law.
His law is greater. Those laws were written for man, not for God. If God wants you to do something, you're going to do it. Who controls every mind on the face of the earth? God does. The wicked too. He sets them all up. They can't comprehend that. Because religion, Hezekiah's told them, you worship at my altar over here. See? That's all it is. I've got it under control. Whatever you need, I'll take care of you. Don't worry about it. I'll get you. I got your ticket. When the bus comes, I'll get you on the bus. That's what they believe. Any questions?